Revolutions Per Minute is a weekly radio show from the New York City chapter of the Democratic Socialists of America, recorded live at WBAI 99.5 in Brooklyn every Tuesday at 5. RPM is about doing the work to build a democratic socialist future. Every week, hear the latest news, analysis, and organizing experience from the minds and hearts of activists fighting every day in NYC. Join the movement at socialists.nyc.
Hey, what's up, New York City? It's Amy Wilson. You're listening to Revolutions Per Minute live on WBAI. We are a socialist radio show and podcast from members of the New York City Democratic Socialists of America. The Democratic Socialists of America is the largest socialist organization in the United States, with 70,000 members nationwide. NYCDSA is its biggest chapter. We are run by our 5,500-plus members and organizers who are working together to build democratic socialism in all five boroughs. Once again, my name is Amy Wilson. I'll be your host for today. I use she, her pronouns, and I'm with the DSA of North Brooklyn. As pressure on the working class continues to mount, workers in every sector of society are finding their voices. Transit workers are advocating for democracy and anti-racism within their own union. Teachers are fighting for safe school reopenings. And in a historic moment, last week, basketball players in the NBA and WNBA went on strike for Black Lives. On today's episode of Revolutions Per Minute, we're focusing on another type of worker, artists attempting to respond to the social injustices exposed by the COVID-19 pandemic and the 2020 uprising against racist police brutality. We'll hear from Bonita Oliver and Dorian Wallace, two anti-capitalist musicians and members of the Sing in Solidarity movement chorus, on their brand new work, Fan the Flames of Discontent. Exclusively for Revolutions Per Minute, Bonita and Dorian have shared an excerpt from this Wage Earners Cantata, which we'll hear in the second half of the show. We also speak to transit worker and NYCDSA labor branch member John Ferretti of TWU Local 100 Fight Back Coalition on building solidarity to combat COVID capitalism during this critical moment for organized labor. But first, the headlines with Simone Norman.
The New York City Teachers Union is preparing for a strike to protest the city's plan to reopen in-person schooling. Educators say they haven't had time to properly plan a safe reopening and face staffing shortages and no clear plan from the Department of Education. After pressure from the NYPD, the City Council is considering amending a recently passed law that bars the NYPD from using chokeholds. The proposed amendments would soften the ban on police applying pressure to someone's diaphragm. The MTA announced that it may be forced to cut subway and bus service by 40% and commuter rail service by 50% if the federal government does not provide $12 billion in aid. Former Governor David Paterson's lobbying effort to oppose taxing the wealthy quickly fell apart this week. A day after the group was announced, some of the advocacy organizations that initially joined dropped out, saying that they were brought into the group under false pretenses. The City Council is pushing the state to allow the city to borrow billions in order to avoid massive layoffs. Revel scooters have returned to city streets after three recent fatalities caused a temporary ban. Polly Trottenberg, commissioner of the NYC DOT, outlined new user protocols at a press conference. And in election news, Tiffany Caban is expected to run for City Council in District 22 of Astoria. State Senator Brad Hoyleman introduced a bill to allow county boards of election to establish drop boxes for absentee voters who are worried about reduced USPS service. And finally, as a result of the Wildcat strike initiated by NBA players in Orlando, Madison Square Garden is working with the NYC Board of Elections to become a polling location in the November election.
Thank you, Simone. Our headlines are brought to you by The Thorn, an incredible weekly newsletter by NYCDSA's Electoral Working Group, covering local politics and radical activism. Subscribe at thethorn.nyc. So as I mentioned in today's introduction, the bulk of today's edition of Revolutions Per Minute will be focused on a long interview with two wonderful composers and artists, Bonita and Dorian, about a piece that focuses on both the history and the modern day of the labor movement and its relationship to music. So do stay tuned for that. But given that this is a time in history when there is news from the world of organized labor every single day, sometimes multiple times a day, we also wanted to reserve some time in today's show for an update from a union organizer and activist. So I'm hoping that he is with me by Skype. John Ferretti, are you there? Okay. Thank you, Reggie. So while we're waiting for John to join us live on the air, I'll remind our listeners that John was interviewed back in the fall of 2019 with regard to his work in the Local 100 Fight Back Coalition. So this is a group working within TWU Local 100. That's the MTA transit workers. But John has... Oh, hi, John. Are you here?
Yes, I'm here. Hi.
Hi. Welcome to Revolutions Per Minute. Welcome back.
Oh, thank you. Thank you again for the invite.
Of course. I was just telling the listeners that you were here back in the fall and that you're representing the Local 100 Fight Back Coalition of TWU Local 100. So, John, if you wouldn't mind, tell us what's going on in the world of labor as of today, September 1st, 2020. What's your prescription for organized labor right now?
Well, right now, I mean, I'm sure people are aware of the inspiring struggles going on, being led mostly by rank-and-file teachers, students, parents across the country against the unsafe school reopening plans with regard to COVID-19 safety concerns. There's also been the creation of here in New York, a New York school workers solidarity campaign, which we were a part of, and which is driven by the movement of rank and file educators, and the SA is also playing a big role in it. If you combine that with the NBA, WNBA, NHL Wildcat strike action in response to the attempted police murder of Jacob Blake, there's a lot of reason for being optimistic about the prospects of struggles in the near future. And the only reason for that is the role played by rank and file caucuses, most of them led by socialists, people who openly describe themselves as socialists who are anti-capitalist and put forward class consciousness or class conscious perspective in the working class. Mm-hmm. And that's largely because of the role of our boss-loving labor bureaucrats. You know, anybody who's a teacher right now is probably seething with anger at the sellout backdoor deal made by Michael Mulgrew with Mayor Bill de Blasio, which basically is caving on the demands of teachers and was basically a deal cut behind their backs with no involvement of the teachers the day before their delegates assembly was to meet to discuss a potential strike. You know, in our union, we have the same kind of boss-loving leaders who basically sat by and collaborated with the bosses to set up conditions that murdered 140 of our members due to COVID-19. You know, the leadership that we have right now are basically agents of the ruling class within the unions, and they basically transmit boss logic into the consciousness of workers. So, I mean, basically, what I mean by boss consciousness is the idea that we should be pragmatic, we should want to collaborate with the bosses and be partners and friends of theirs and help them solve their problems instead of being class struggle organizations that organize working to fight for the working class's interest and not the bosses. So a lot of what Local 100 Fight Back does and other and a lot of other social justice caucuses within the unions is to try to fight for social justice unionism, which means that unions are not a union for one section of workers and they're not in competition with other workers. They're supposed to be a class-wide self-defense organization of the working class. When we preach solidarity and unity and united fronts with other workers, it's not about moralism. It's not about, oh, wouldn't it be great and wouldn't we feel good if we did these things? It's a matter of our class is not going to survive if we don't do these things in the era of Trump and in the era of white supremacy and the decay of a capitalist system. And, you know, what's happening right now is there's a lack of cultural memory within the working class of what a union means, what it looks like. People have no memory of any time when they've seen unions actually function this way. So part of the reason why you see 1,000 people on a Moore caucus call is because they're inspired by just a glimpse of the power that we could have and just a small sample of what a real union could look like. And so what we try to do as well is develop a dialogue amongst the working class that's a two-way dialogue, not a one-way dialogue. Like a lot of the left, unfortunately, talks at the working class or talks down to the working class and assumes what their illusions are, assumes where their shortcomings are in consciousness instead of actually finding out what they think. So we host Facebook live streams that reach up to 10,000 transit workers and their families on a regular basis. We try to do it every week. This week we're going to be doing one on the events in Kenosha, Wisconsin, the attempted police murder of Jacob Blake and the white supremacist murder of two Black Lives Matter protesters in Kenosha. So, you know, we think that's going to be a very interesting discussion because we don't think those are not trade union issues. We think that a trade union that doesn't fight racism is dead. A trade union that doesn't have a side in these fights has no direction whatsoever and is soon to be gone. And so that's what we're trying to breathe life into the trade union movement by having the voice of workers heard. And I think that's a big step forward. And I don't think you'll see that many other places within the union movement.
Sure. Yeah. So thank you so much, A, for your work, B, for visiting us here on Revolutions Per Minute, and C, for continuing to host these spaces where, as you say, people can talk to each other rather than at each other or past each other. And for our Revolutions Per Minute listeners, we will have a link to those live streams in our show notes for today. So make sure you check that out. We've got a DSA comrade, Haley Pessin, who's going to be featured on this Friday's live stream. And John, I especially appreciated what you had to say about cultural memory and class solidarity. I think the composer who is an IWW member who I'm interviewing for the rest of today's show would be very pleased to hear you say that.
Yes, I'm sure she would. And by the way, it's at 7 p.m. on the Local 100 Fight Back Coalition page. But like you said, you're going to post it in the links.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Of course. Well, we'll have to have you back for a more in-depth conversation one of these weeks. Thanks for your work and be well, John.
Okay. Thank you so much.
So that was John Ferretti of the New York City DSA Labor Branch, as well as the Local 100 Fight Back Coalition within TWU Local 100, with a brief update from today's world in organized labor. You're listening to Revolutions Per Minute on listener-sponsored WBAI. And today we have a very special feature. We're featuring members of our Sing in Solidarity Movement Chorus, who have collaborated with an organization called 10th Intervention. To compose and release an entirely new experimental piece of working class music called Fan the Flames of Discontent. So in the second half of our show, we will have an excerpt from this larger piece of music. But I'm going to be spending the bulk of the show talking to these comrades, Dorian Wallace and Bonita Oliver, about the inspiration behind the work. So Reggie, would you help me out and go ahead and roll the first part of that clip. Welcome to Revolutions Per Minute.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
So to get us started, we're going to talk about the project in just a moment, but if you wouldn't mind, tell us a little bit about yourself. Who are you? What is your connection to the Democratic Socialists? And I'll ask a question that my comrade Jack Devine often asks our guests on Revolutions Per Minute. What are the social forces that brought you to organizing? So let's start with Bonita.
Yes. So I was raised in a household that was very much about doing and creating where there was a need, creating things that didn't exist where there is a need. So that has really informed everything I do in my life. In terms of addressing specific causes, I am motivated by the things that have impacted me directly that I see happening to other people. So it's just a natural inclination for me to want to align myself with other people, you know, striving to push for the same things and call to justice, call for justice against wrongdoings that we're seeing in society. So I was, actually at an organized rally that was organized by another social group where I met a person who was involved with Sing in Solidarity. And that's how the connection came about for me to be involved specifically with Sing in Solidarity. I would not say that I'm directly affiliated with DSA, but many of the members of Sing in Solidarity are. And so that's how I came to be aligned with them. And that's how I eventually met Dorian.
Wonderful. So we here at Revolutions Per Minute have a close connection with Sing in Solidarity. They provided the theme song that we use to open our show every week. So we always love to.
Solidarity Forever? Is that? Yep.
So were you the lead singer on that version?
Yes.
Of Solidarity? Okay,
yep.
Great. Yeah. I hate to inform you, Bonita, but it's since been changed. We now use El Pueblo Unido, but we use.
I love it. Solidarity. It's all, yes.
Great. So thanks for coming on the show to speak with us. And let's hear from your collaborator, Dorian Wallace.
Hey, what's going on? I guess, you know, I actually come from a very conservative family out in Ohio. And, you know, bit by bit, had some various changes in my political views. You know, most of it happened through adulthood and all of those realms. I'm actually an Army veteran, which is a very strange thing. You know, I had joined basically to pay for schooling, but what ended up coming out of that was a lot of sort of head-on confrontations with things that I thought I believed and realized I did not believe. I've been a musician since I was about 4 years old, a composer and piano player, blah, 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 blah. I got to around when I was 25 years old, started having a drastic shift with using, I like to call it as like, you know, using music responsibly, just because even though, you know, independent artists don't necessarily have a huge platform, we still have a platform. We're still on stage. We're still in event spaces and, you know, all of these sorts of realms. So my music ended up shifting a lot more politically oriented. I had actually joined the IWW in like 2016. But anyways, I was looking for a way to actually get involved musically, and I Facebook messaged the New York City DSA, and they connected me with Sing in Solidarity, and I met with one of their coordinators, Ben Bath, started playing piano for the chorus. That's how that happened. And through Sing in Solidarity is how I met Bonita. And so I wasn't a member of DSA actually until, there was an event, with AOC that the chorus, you had to be a member of DSA to go into. So I joined for that reason. But most of my activities are directly involved with Sing in Solidarity.
Great. And throughout the rest of this interview, I hope that we can really dig into and illuminate what Sing in Solidarity and what movement musicians are doing with their work, and why that's not a sidebar to our project toward building a better world, but in fact is a very central piece of what we're trying to do. So, let's talk a little bit about the project that you've got coming up, and that we're here to talk about on Revolutions Per Minute special today. What is it? I'll stop there. What is the project that you're here to talk about today?
Fan the Flames of Discontent is a call to action. It is a way of using our voice, our musicianship to call people together, to bring attention to the fact that this capitalistic system that we're all living in is no longer, it's not working for the people. And so we hope that this piece will be inspiring. We hope that it will, at this moment in time, this very specific moment in time where we have a chance to really start anew, you know, that it will inspire people to do that.
Yeah. And then just to, I guess, fill in just a little bit on how this piece specifically came together. The original idea was I had wanted to write a cantata, like a working class cantata, and just through Sing in Solidarity started to meet a lot of different, just vocalists and singers who are not necessarily professional musicians. And so the original idea was like, oh, like after hearing Bonita sing, it was like, I want to write her a piece. But as we got to meeting one another, it became very, very obvious that it was going to be a much more collaborative project. It wasn't going to be composer and performer. It was going to be a much more circular dynamic. And so we really have taken on, I'd say, the same workload on the creative prospect or the creative side of it. And then the other element is that originally we were going to premiere this piece back in like April or May, but then COVID-19 had happened, as the entire world knows. And we're shifting the whole thing now into the online format. And so a lot of the music that has come out of this was, utilizing experimental techniques and things like that through Zoom, just seeing mm-hmm. what we could come up with limited technology and, social distancing and all of that. So, yeah.
Yeah, so that's something that I personally am fascinated with as somebody who has spent a lot of time on Zoom and other video conferencing services in the time of this COVID-19 pandemic, hearing all the glitchy audio things that happen as a matter of course, hearing people apologize for background noise or pets or kids or somebody at the door, all of the organic audio that has come up throughout this process. I personally find that fascinating. So I'd love to hear your perspective as artists on how the use of the format of Zoom has actually informed you in this new composition.
Yes, this is such an exciting time for me for that reason, because it's really having us think outside of the box and find new ways to listen to each other, mm-hmm. And to find new ways to create. And so this was a really big opportunity to work collaboratively with people that I probably normally wouldn't have had, access to, and to really co-create something that has the stamp of each one of us in it. Full collaboration. And without boundaries, because it's such a new process. So that was really exciting for me. And I think that we've been, I'm pleased with what we've been bringing forth and we're developing and soon to be released. So I hope other people will enjoy it as well.
Yeah. And, there's some aspects to it that would not have been able to take place had we not been in the virtual space. For instance, Bonita and I, would be in a text conversation and it would be like, you want to just jump on Zoom? And, we would just do that. Whereas outside of this virtual space, like we would have had to plan when to get together and it wouldn't have been every day, sometimes more than once a day.
Yes.
Yeah, all those sorts of things. But even aspects like one of the members of the instrumentalist, it's a friend of mine. His name's Chris Coles. He's somebody I played with when I was living in Ohio. He's still based out of Cleveland. I've wanted to work with him on projects for a long time, but could never get the funds together to fly him out to New York. He's musically one of the most brilliant people I know, and just all those sorts of things. And it was one of those, like, we don't have to be in the same space at all. In fact, and this is actually news for you as well, Bonita, but our bass player just moved to Berlin like a week ago.
So, wow.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. 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 It's a fascinating world. And then there's other things like, there's feedback. There is all those like natural things like that. It's like, do we live with, like, the feedback's going to be there whether we want it to be there or not. So like, might as well use it as part of the musical palette to play with. And it also added a certain sense of community when we were working with the chorus, just because, Bonita and I do music for a living, so we're around music 24 hours a day, always thinking about it, always experiencing it in so many different realms, and it is cool to work with the chorus who, like, this is their moment for music, like away from the rest of their life. And so there was just something really spiritual about creating music in, I don't want to even call it like a high level thing, but, creating music in a space with people that were just so excited to be a part of it. I think we left a lot of those Zoom rehearsals. Everybody was smiling, which is good. Because activism shouldn't just be being angry at the fascists. I mean, it should be, but it's not the only aspect.
Hey, out there, New York City. I'm Amy Wilson. You're listening to Revolutions Per Minute on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York City, broadcasting at 99.5 FM and streaming on your favorite podcast app. To connect with us after the show, you can email us at revolutionsnyc@gmail.com. You can find us on our website, revolutionsperminute.simplecast.com, or on Twitter at NYCRPM. Today, we have an exclusive interview with two composers, Dorian Wallace and Bonita Oliver. And in the second half of our show, we'll have an excerpt of their new composition, Fan the Flames of Discontent. So we will get right back to that interview. But first, it's that time in the show when I have a question to ask of you, which is, are you a BAI buddy in the name of Revolutions Per Minute? And if you are not, why not? We are a weekly radio show straight from the minds and hearts of the over 5,000 organizers of New York City DSA. We cover struggles ranging from tenant defense to organized labor, as we're doing on this show, to cultural organizing, to ecological organizing, and many other sectors, everything that our socialist movement touches. Here on WBAI, it is a listener-supported station, which means that we are not beholden to corporate or foundation interests in what we cover, which is a huge benefit for us as organizers. We can speak freely and allow our guests to speak freely and speak truth to power, which is what WBAI has been doing for decades and generations at this point. So to continue that legacy of our community radio station, we like to ask you to, if you can, support the station with a couple of dollars every month. If you can dedicate it to Revolutions Per Minute, that is greatly appreciated by us, our production collective. To give to the station, you can call 516-620-3602. That's 516-620-3602. 3602. You can also visit WBAI.org. Thank you so much for listening, for your support of the station. And let's get back to that interview round out the second half of our show today. Dorian, you said that you wanted this to be a working class cantata. So talk to me a little bit about the politics that are baked into the artistic inspiration for this piece.
I wanted to talk to that too. So I'm glad that you, I'm going to listen.
Music has been with humans since the Paleolithic era. This is actually a beautiful thing to mention. So Noam Chomsky, not talking about him as the brilliant, anarchist theorist, but social critic, but as a linguist, he has spoken about how human beings, when we were evolving, language and music and dance and mathematics were all coming from the same place. They're these abstract ideas that human beings basically started evolving simultaneously. And it's at these aspects that are a part of our evolutionary makeup and a part of how we've gotten to where we are. That's a really long-winded way of saying that when you break down those four aspects, music, dance, language, and mathematics, besides the fact that all four of them are abstract ideas, if you look at where the brain patterns are basically functioning, or when certain things are happening, language and mathematics are more in tune with the left hemisphere, which is the logic center of the brain, whereas dance and music are more of the right side of the brain. And in a capitalist society, who gets shafted and who succeeds? And it's, somebody like Donald Trump, who I'm not going to say has language skills as far as, being an excellent speaker, but he knows how to BS his way around things. And he has succeeded by, being a con artist because the system allows him to succeed. But anyways, that's a long-winded way of saying that the creative arts and the performance arts are a part of the human experience. They always have been. They most likely always will be. There's something about the spiritual nature and connectivity of music. It affects people in a different way than just telling somebody a story is. Man, I'm like totally rambling, but the idea is that there are a couple of different realms of music that I like to explore, and I don't want to speak on behalf of Bonita, but I'm certain that that you would agree with me on this. There are different realms of music where there's sometimes the very experimental and very I don't even want to say heady or intellectual, because I don't think those are the right words, but there are spaces for very, very, very cool levels of experimentation. And then there's also music that is just so from the soul. Mm. I don't really differentiate between them other than in just discussing it. And so one of the ideas was, how could this be music where I could get with my musician comrades and jam with them on a very like deep musical level, but also have, anybody in the working class participate and join in singing in unison together. How can you get somebody with the skill level of Bonita Oliver, who's, a virtuoso, she's like a master level singer. How do you, utilize those skills and that labor, but also you know, bring everybody else along with the project. So I know that like didn't actually answer the question, but yeah.
No, I think it's a great response to the question. And I'm wondering, Bonita, if you have anything that you'd like to add about the politics specifically of this piece, Fan the Flames of Discontent, that you were a co-composer with Dorian on.
Well, I'm just going to say a lot of things. First, I just want to say, you know, for myself, music is just like breathing for me. And I feel that music and rhythm and vibration is so much a part of everyone's life. No matter if you're a musician, if you're a child singing, you know, at home playing with your toys, you know, music is such a part of all of our lives. And I really don't, I personally do not recognize any demarcations or classifications. Music is music. All music comes from the soul. I do know that we can approach it, making it in different ways, and sometimes mm-hmm. it can get very heady. Mm-hmm. We can put the heady stuff over the soul, but it always at the root is coming from the soul. But so anyway, that's one thing I'm going to say. And then I think that our piece is, I mean, I know that I was really trying to speak to, really trying to create something that speaks to what we're going through right now in this moment, that also echoes what we've been actually going through for decades, for over a century. You know, we are having the same struggles and we are making the same calls that people in 1912 were making. About how we approach work in the society, how we devalue human lives, how we value money more than we value the exchange. So this piece for me was really a chance to speak to that, because that to me is a big part of what we're experiencing right now. When we started working on this, like Dorian has already said, this was initially going to be about the IWW more specifically, and kind of like looking at how music has been a part of their movements. But then, you know, COVID happened and we were quarantining, and then this term essential workers came about. And these essential workers are expected to go out and put their lives on the line for the economy so that the economy doesn't fail, because that is what's most important. So, you know, I just felt that it was really important at this time to address that, to address the fact that we are valuing money much more than, you know, the relationship between a mother and a child, or our people and our elders. I mean, our elders were sadly, you know, really impacted by this virus. Mm-hmm. That's like a whole generation of wisdom that we're sacrificing. You know, people who are essential workers who may have to take care of their parents who are going to be put at risk by them going out to work, but they really don't have a choice because we didn't suspend rent. You know, I just felt like it was really important to create a piece that was really highlighting the dysfunction of our society, that we are putting money over lives.
Well, and another aspect as well is what Bonita just said about essential workers. You know, artists are essential workers. I mean, you know, when somebody goes through a tragedy, where do they turn to? They turn to music that they need. They turn to TV shows or movies that they need, you know, to get through difficult experiences. And, you know, COVID hit and there were still no protections for artists. They're not there. Even the big gigs, even the, you know, the Broadway musicians and the orchestral musicians, like people who are supposedly protected in certain realms. All of the pension money has just been eaten up. You know, and it's like, how do you go any further than some of these gigs? And it's like, there's still no stability. Part of it was, not only telling the story of the world, but also telling our own story and our own perspective, being artists in this situation.
Well, I gotta say, I really respond to a lot of what you just both said, Dorian and Bonita. Bonita, I especially respond to your point about losing a generation of elders and how music provides a connection not only to the present but also to the past, because we are working in a tradition. We're working in many cases, whether it's a folk tradition or a more institutionalized tradition that reflects a heritage as well. So with that all said, and that in the minds of our Revolutions Per Minute listeners, I'm very excited to say that we do have an excerpt from this Wage Earners Cantata, Fan the Flames of Discontent. It's about a 5-minute excerpt that will play for your listening enjoyment. And then I'll be back with Bonita Oliver and Dorian Wallace, the co-composers of the piece, to tell you how you can hear more.
How will I get?
Easy pattern here. They're waging a war against the poor and the working class. Because when you're unemployed, easy pattern here. They don't want to rebuild America's crumbling infrastructure or have any other job.
boom, boom, boom.
I love that rendition. Oh my God. Yeah. We should put that
in. Is that the People's Blues?
Yeah. That's a good beat. You can dance to it, you know?
Totally. So, thank you.
Do you want to hear something about the People's Blues on the compositional part of it?
It would be really cool to talk about that.
No. So one of the ideas, we were speaking a lot when creating this piece about reaching into the unconscious. And so the general rhythm that is taking place throughout the whole thing, that's Morse code for radical cooperation.
What?
Yeah. And it was specifically notated without any notation. We wrote it out with verbal text, so ta-ti-ta-ti-ta-ta-ti-ti, like that, in a Google Doc. So the idea is that anybody could read it if they wanted to. You don't have to know how to read music, quote-unquote. And then as far as the actual music, all that we did was our percussionist, Nicole, she laid down a track playing drums on her own, any time limit as she wanted, however she felt inspired based on the Morse code, like groove. And then what we did was we sent that track to each of the musicians and had them improvise whatever they wanted on top of it without listening to anybody else. And then we spliced all of that together. And it was like super incredible hearing.
Like, yes. Oh, you know, so exciting.
Six people who had never, like, who had never heard what the other people were doing. Like, not, like no, nothing was discussed other than that this pulse had to be in there. That was the only factor. And it was just so freaking cool putting all of that together. And I don't know if you want to comment on that, Bonita.
Yeah, I mean, I just that's what I'm talking about. That's so exciting about this new way of making music in this time of quarantine and sickness, and, you know, just really listening in new ways and really challenging ourselves to break out of all boxes that we had constricted ourselves within, you know, like just to approach this, you know, with total freedom. How expansive it is to do things in this way. I really enjoyed this particular process, this total freedom, just having that one through line, that one connecting through line, but then giving people complete and utter freedom to do whatever they felt over that. And that's so amazing how many different ways, you know, people interpreted that, and then how all of those different interpretations without us even knowing anything about the other. And that can be, you know, just very, you know, very analogous to life. You know, people from all different backgrounds can actually come together and do something that is so amazing. And that was this process. That was what this process represented to me. And I don't know, I really like the outcome. I like what we all came up with.
Yeah, and it really fits into organizing as well, because a lot of times you don't know what the outcome is going to be. But the central, you know, the core philosophy needs to be understood. You know, it's like we're fighting for our rights.
That's the bonding force, the binding force. Yeah.
You know, but how are we going to do that? And just one last aspect is we actually called the Morse code rhythm. We were calling it the biorhythm, and it actually takes place throughout the whole piece in various points. It's like, all right, so yeah, then you play the biorhythm, you know, something along the biorhythm. I don't know. It was super fun.
Yeah, I love it. I think this is so fascinating, and I love that idea of organizing or making music would be both variations on a theme or different interpretations of a central idea. I think there's a lot to chew on there. And this was just a 5-minute excerpt. The whole piece is substantially longer. My understanding is it's about 40 minutes long, and it also involves a multimedia component, visuals, right? So there's going to be a lot going on. And it's going to be premiering, no coincidence, on Labor Day, September 7th. So tell the Revolutions Per Minute listeners, if you wouldn't mind, how they can hear the full fan the flames of discontent cantata when it is released.
Cool. So we haven't actually mentioned this group yet, but 10th Intervention is the producing organization. And what 10th Intervention is, it's myself and my partner, Heinel Pivnik, who's a violinist. And the central mission to 10th Intervention is performing the music of living composers, as well as addressing socially progressive issues. And so, anyways, this is a collaboration with 10th Intervention and Sing in Solidarity. You can check out www.10thintervention.com. It's spelled out TENTHINTERVENTION. And all of the information is going to be there. We're going to be live streaming it on YouTube and Facebook. And I believe, we're thinking like 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Is that correct?
I think we can go with that.
Yeah. Yeah. We're still editing the thing, so.
That's the goal.
Yeah.
I got to say, I'm getting the sense from working with the two of you that this thing isn't going to be quite done until about 8:59 p.m. on.
Boom! She nailed it. That's what I literally said to Dorian the other day.
Yep.
Okay. Well, it's a very alive, very vibrant piece of work. And I personally can't wait to hear the whole thing. And I hope that our Revolutions Per Minute listeners will tune in, support our socialist chorus, Sing in Solidarity, in their collaboration with 10th Intervention. Dorian or Bonita, do you have any final thoughts that you'd like to leave our audience with, or things to keep in mind that might help the listeners understand the process of your composition and enrich their experience of listening to the final piece?
Well, just, you know, again, music is such an essential part of life. And, you know, during the civil rights movement, music was a huge galvanizing force, and it can be today still. Music will help any movement propel, you know, it will help propel any movement forward, because it really is a unifying force. So I would love for more voices to take to the streets. I would love for more artists to get out there and lend their voice to causes that matter to them, because that is what we need, and it is powerful.
Yeah, and aside from approaching this piece to listening to it and checking it out, just check it out. support artists. One thing that can oftentimes get forgotten, even in leftist circles, is that artists utilizing our craft, the creative process, that is labor. It takes hours and hours and hours and hours of our life developing some of these skills, and we're oftentimes not compensated. We're doing it because we love it, which is important. But, you know, we also still have to eat. We still have to pay rent. Until the capitalist system completely crumbles, which, you know, I'm totally advocating for. Until then, we still got bills to pay. So just keep that in mind, just for the future.
Wonderful. Well said. Thank you so much to both of you for speaking with me on our Revolutions Per Minute exclusive. We're really excited to support this project and to hear the final piece when it premieres. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much.
All right, New York City, we've come to the end of this week's episode of Revolutions Per Minute with featuring Dorian Wallace and Bonita Oliver. Please do check out our show notes for more information about everything that you heard on today's show. You can visit us at revolutionsperminute.simplecast.com. We'll be back next Tuesday at 5 o'clock right here on WBAI 99.5 FM. And until the capitalist system completely crumbles, support each other, talk to your coworkers, talk to your neighbors, and remember, we have nothing to lose but our chains. I'm Amy Wilson. This has been Revolutions Per Minute, and we'll see you next week.